All right. We're against the advice, better advice of those who advised us. We're looking at the two-minute report here from last night, which, again, we can do and we can maybe even enjoy it, relax a little bit, because, it doesn't matter. But the thing is, double overtime game, it is the lengthiest two-minute report I think I've ever seen.
Dude, it's pages on top of pages. I tried to look at it on my phone, and I just kept scrolling and scrolling. Had to pull up the laptop to try and decipher everything. There's a lot of correct calls and a correct non-calls on here. But there are a few calls that the officials got wrong that the NBA is admitting today.
Can I tell you the first call I went to was first overtime, 8.7 left, offensive foul on Paulo, one of the charges that Trey Lyles took.
Yep.
And the league is saying that was an incorrect call.
Yeah, it says after releasing the shot, Banchero's left hand comes down onto Lyles' body and marginal contact occurs after Lyles' legal contest.
See, some are suggesting perhaps that the reason that call went in favor of Orlando when clearly the Kings didn't touch the balls because the officials
making up for that, a little
makeup call for that.
They wouldn't do such a thing, would they?
They just That's the only explanation.
No, you're right. I actually, now that I'm not on the broadcast and I could just be, I thought that was a questionable call. Like, I thought, you know, yeah, he did use the hand and everything, but the two-minute reporter saying he had already released the ball. I thought Trey might have even been moving just a little bit.
Yeah, I thought he was too.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was a call we benefited from.
Right.
They got it wrong, but we benefited for that.
And then how about the other one, the big one that everybody saw and was upset about?
Yeah, this one happened at 1.1. Oh, no, not that one. Sorry about that. I got to go down. 3.1. Quarter five, first overtime, Juan Toscano-Anderson and Paolo Banchero involved in this. I'll just read what they say. Banchero loses control of the ball on his gather without any contact occurring to him by a defender, and it sails out of bounds. Banchero is last to touch the ball, and possession should have been awarded to the Kings. Incorrect call was made in that game.
I'm telling you that it was a makeup call is the only thing in my mind that makes sense.
You know, the problem the league has with that is, and this is what's so frustrating, we can all see it in the arena because they play it a billion times. You can see it at home. Like, the only people who don't know it are the ones that should know it is the officials. Like, they're supposed to know that, be able to look, hopefully, and see that and change that. That's what's so frustrating. Everybody watching, whether you're in the arena or you're at home, you can see it. But the officials, who are the most important ones, they can
It's just
get a
hard
look at it.
To believe because there's three of them. And even where I was sitting, and you're closer, a lot closer than we are in the media, but where I was, you could see that there was no one around him. There was nobody else around him. There's no way that was off of somebody else. And again, you look at Paulo, and not once did he go, hey, no, it hit him, or review it. He just went, oh, no. So it's crystal clear. So I don't know. To me, the only thing that makes any sense is makeup call. Otherwise, they just, the officials weren't even watching the game.
Yeah. And I guess we'll never know, but you're right. That was such an egregiously bad call that we hope they're saying, all right, we screwed him last time. We'll take care of him this time. Because if you're that incompetent, if you're that bad, what does that say about you? I got you. You know, there was another one I just saw, and I mentioned it just a second ago, that came at the 1.1 mark in this game. It was the screen by Domantas Sabonis. And, you know, Magic fans, they're upset about this. They're talking about this call.
Was that where Queen was out?
Yeah, he got laid out. Domantas Sabonis with the screen. This was at 21.6 in the first overtime. After the dribble handoff, Sabonis establishes himself in Queen's path before the contact. However, Sabonis, after assuming a legal position, he moves toward Queen by turning his body, and a foul was warranted. Trevlin Queen got laid out. Mm-hmm. They said that was an incorrect non-call. Yeah.
So maybe they figured they had to. It was a double makeup call.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, there was a lot to unpack here. You know, a lot of calls down the stretch that, and that's going to happen. Obviously, in an NBA game, you're going to have missed calls. You're going to have, like, earlier in quarter four, I think it was Jalen Suggs. They said should have been called for travel. At the 6 minute mark, he slides his pivot foot to create space. Incorrect non calls. It's the big ones. It's the egregious ones that we can all see that I think fans have a problem with.
But Kings fans know this all too well from last year. The two-minute report comes out. Herter was fouled by Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Should have been a foul. Yeah. It doesn't do any good.
It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. You don't feel better. You knew it already. You don't get anything for it. I mean,
so what do you think then? You're trying to do away with the two-minute report?
I think they should. I mean, you talk to the coaches. They hate it, right?
Yeah.
You talk to coaches.
Yeah.
They can't stand it.
It serves no purpose. Because if you're a team in the league admits you were screwed, it's like you guys are admitting you cost us a game, you know? It's probably better to just not even admit it, you know?
Yeah.
Just say, you know what, we're just going to move on. And so I understand they're trying to be transparent, but I don't know what it serves, what it accomplishes.
I think it's not a good answer, but I think it's the lesser of two evils. It's like, this is what good is this? Well, it's not great, but it's better than when you had, you know, years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it was, where some people thought these games are fixed because of Donaghy.
Right.
It's worse if you don't acknowledge that you made mistakes and then people say, oh, yeah, they won't acknowledge it because
right.
It's all fixed. So it's like you can't win.
The NBA. Damned if you do,
this
damned if
great,
you don't.
But it's probably better than that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but like you said earlier, we were on the winning side.
Yes.
If we had lost, then some of these calls, like mm-hmm. that out of bounds off of Bancaro, you know, stood and we lost that game, we're looking back on that and we're saying the refs screwed us, the NBA robbed us. You know, now we can dive into the two-minute report and say, you know what, all right, some bad calls, but we got the win. We're good.
That might be, honestly, that's one of, if not the worst call I've ever seen. And I know that
right.
there's more important calls in bigger games, so I get that. But just a guy on the open floor losing the ball and they say, oh, it's off the defense. There was no reason for anybody to make that call that way. It was bizarre.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and look and see exactly how that transpired. Because like I said, the woman official, Claire, you know, she signaled Sacramento basketball. And then, you know, they're milling around and I'm like, hold on, we're staying down this end? And so I didn't see, you know, from mm-hmm. my vantage point and everything, I didn't see the officials gathering and who did what. I'd like to look at
them
back.
Long
yeah,
either.
It didn't take them all. Yeah, exactly. I thought Claire signaled our way, and then all of a sudden it was Orlando Ball, and that just surprised me. And so that's frustrating, right? Because that official that overturned that call, that changed that call, thought in his mind – he saw it go off of Juan Toscano.
Yeah.
But clearly it did.
He thought he's doing her a favor. Yeah, oh, hey, you missed it.
You missed it. I got you. Yeah, I actually, you know. But no, you didn't.
Maybe she should have said, what, no, you, there's no one near him.
Right. But Claire is a first-year official, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so, she, you know, you had, you know, Michael Smith, who a veteran of 31 years. I forget the other official, a veteran of 19 seasons. She was the newbie of the bunch. And so, you know. She made the call, but then she was overruled by some of the veteran officials.
Sean Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
All right. All's well that ends well, though, right?
Yes.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Steven is on with the Drive Guys. Hello, Steven. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. What's up, Steve?
We're just glad that we don't have to, you know, complain about that call costing the Kings a game last night.
Ah, ain't that the truth, man? No more times than I would like to admit that has been probably the topic of conversation. So if they messed up so bad, if the referees messed up so bad, I'm not trying to make this a ref call, but this is just a generalized question. Do these guys get held accountable in any way, shape, or form? Like, is there any sort of punishment? Do they, like, lose a game? I know they get, like, ratings and
right.
So they can do, like, big games and stuff like that. So, like, I know they take a hit there, but do they get any sort of like, you're going to take a couple games off or we're going to send you off to G League or something? That was kind of my question. I don't know if you guys have any insight on that.
Well, I'll just tell you this, and then I'll let Kyle address the specifics basketball-wise, but the official that botched the end of the Lions and Cowboys game, I know it's football, but like he's probably not going to get any postseason assignments.
Right.
So there's,
right.
You know, you're not really punished, but you lose opportunities to make money. As far as the NBA, I assume it's similar.
It's similar. You don't get the marquee matchups. You don't get the playoff games, you know, and it's something, it's not a fine system or anything like that, but you just don't get assigned as much. Mm-hmm. And so the best officials get assigned the biggest games and the most games. And so I sat in a league meeting about this. This was a couple of years ago, and this point was raised. Like, there needs to be some accountability among the officials. And, you know, you got the pool report where, you know, one person is able to ask the official, you know, a bunch of questions and everything like that. But outside of that, outside of, you know, not – refereeing and being a part of the big games, the finals, the playoffs. That's about it. That's about it, yeah.
Not to spend too much time wandering down, you know, memory lane, but I really think that game six, the Lakers and the Kings, when Mike Bibby ran into Kobe and got a broken nose and they called a foul on him, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that you have the two-minute report. Because we had Ralph Nader coming out saying, there has to be an investigation.
right.
You know, and it fed into that whole – and
Tim Donaghy's situation.
Yeah. It really did look like something was up in that Laker-Kings series. So that's why the league here has to try to be transparent.
Yeah.
Is it working? I don't know. But, you know, and then somebody on the text line points out, it's just the rules around when the refs review are confusing.
Right. So, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm in favor of more review late in games. I understand it slows it down. It takes it off. But if you're unsure – or like somebody mentioned also, it might have been on the post-game show yesterday or Sirius XM NBA Radio, why not have somebody in Secaucus, New Jersey, say, you know what, guys, you need to take a look at it.
Eye of the sky.
Exactly. Something like that. And instead of leaving it to just those officials, there's a reason why you got a replay center. There's a reason why you have that eye in the sky. They can easily buzz somebody and say, hey, they need to take a look. Same thing a few weeks ago with the clock situation. Remember the clock malfunction?
Yeah.
You know, where they added a minute and change or whatever it was, 51 seconds.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
It was
bizarre. That came from Secaucus. Like, yo, you need to take a look at this. It should be a mechanism where that happens during the games as well.
Yeah, there certainly should be. We're going to take a quick time out here. When we come back, Domas deserves more credit. So why doesn't he get more credit? 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. It's The Drive, guys. Answering all your questions today on Sacktown Sports. All right, Kyle Draper, got a trade idea for you from the text line here. I don't think you're going to like
it. Uh-oh, here we go. What we got?
Fans are going to fan. Hey, we're just having fun here from the 916. Can the Kings make a trade for Matisse Thybulle and Ben Simmons? Sure, Ben Stock is nothing right now, so you can get him, right? Yeah.
Ben Simmons.
Is he even playing? He's hurt
again. He's hurt again. Yeah, he hasn't played since early in the season.
Expensive, damaged goods.
No thanks.
But you like the other guy, don't you?
Matisse Thybulle, we need a wing perimeter defender. And he's knocking down a three ball this year as well. I think he's high 30s, 37, 38%. And so I would love to get Matisse Thybulle. And, you know, we had the caller talking about Portland and the glut of guards. They do have a logjam there. And, you know, whether it's Brogdon, Matisse Thybulle, you know, Shade Sharp, they got, you know, they got to move off on somebody.
Yeah.
Scoot, you know, you got Simons, like, they got to move off on somebody. And so, would you, Kings fans, give up a protected first-round pick for Matisse Thybulle? I'm just throwing that out there. Protected first-round pick. We gave that up for Kevin Huerter.
Yeah.
You know, in that Huerter deal, would you do that for Matisse Thybulle?
I feel like I'm close enough now, and I need better and more consistent bench play.
Yeah.
The starting lineup, and we talked yesterday about Barnes and Huerter, they're not what they were last year, but your starters, and we'll look at some numbers coming up on the show, your starters are still holding their own.
Yeah, exactly. It's the drop-off when you take some of them starters out, you know? And Matisse Thybulle is a steady player, a heady player, competes defensively, which you need. Think about this. When you look at some of the teams we'll have to go through, who's guarding Jamal Murray if we have to face the Denver Nuggets?
The answer to anybody like that is always either Keegan or Harrison, right?
That's right, Harrison.
Where you are
or
right
maybe
now.
You throw De'Aaron Fox on. But, you know, if you have to throw De'Aaron Fox on the other team's best perimeter player, that might be asking too much.
Yeah.
He can do it, yes. I'm not saying he can't do it. He can do it, But that's, wouldn't it be nice to have a Matisse, a defensive stopper? And Davion is that to an extent, you know, but he's a little undersized. Matisse Thybulle, he can guard 1 through 4 at times. And so I would love to have a guy like him on the team.
Yeah, HB would have to guard Aaron Gordon there, right?
Yeah, he got Aaron Gordon. Yeah, Crown Royal, Thybulle weak, tired of hearing that name. And Conor McGregor will fight before Ben Simmons plays again. Never. All right, okay, you might be right. I ain't got nothing to say about that, but I like Matisse. I think he's a good player.
He guards people and he's making shots.
Yep.
That helps, right? That helps you.
Yeah. He says, if you think Barnes is sleepy, Thybulle isn't even conscious. He's very low energy. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about low energy or being, you know, a second coming of Malik Monk. What I'm talking about is a guy that can defend and a guy that can knock down shots. We're not asking Matisse Thybulle to come in and average 20 points and be this Energizer Bunny or anything like that. The dude is 26 years old, shooting 38.6% from three, and he's an elite defender. What are we talking about here?
Mm-hmm.
Bring him in any day of the week.
Right. Would you give up a protected first?
Yes, in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Yes, because I think Matisse Thybulle moves the needle for you when it matters the most, the playoffs.
Do you know whether they were anywhere near acquiring him last year? Because I know at the deadline last year there was speculation. Anyway.
No, I don't think so. I don't know how close they were.
And he wasn't shooting like as well last year.
No, he wasn't shooting as well. Exactly. He's shooting a career high right now, 38.6%. And he needed to get out of Philadelphia. A change of scenery has benefited him, I think, on the offensive end. And so, two-time all-defense, bring him in. Let's do it. Monty, that might be a guy. You know, we talked about DeJounte Murray, but Matisse Thybulle might be able to be had.
Now, you and I, it's amazing because we don't agree on everything, but these players were like, yes, yes, we would do that. If they got DeJounte Murray, then we don't need Thybulle.
No,
right?
You don't need that. Yeah. Exactly. You know, I mean,
I'm with you.
You could. I mean, and, you know, if you want to add more depth, yes, you could. But I don't think asset wise, you know, I think we're a one trade kind of team this year.
Yeah. If it's a big one.
If it's a big one like that. Yeah. Like DeJounte Murray, it's, you know, I thought it was interesting. We had Jake Fisher on when he said Markkanen is going to take like a Gobert, Donovan Mitchell kind of haul, because there are a lot of fans here in Sacramento that say, why not go get Larry Markkanen? Are we giving up 5 first-round picks, some pick swaps, and some young players for Larry Markkanen?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah.
I wouldn't.
No.
I mean, it's great, Danny Ainge, if you can get that for him, but I wouldn't give him that.
Yep.
We know that a couple weeks ago, De'Aaron Fox was talking about how Domas, he deserves more attention. I think his wife echoed that, right? And yes. Domas last night, I mean, yeah, ho-hum, 22 points on 14 shots and then 23 rebounds and 12 assists. And what I know Alan mentioned, the last guy to put up numbers like that was Wilt Chamberlain, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is misleading because Wilt would do like 50 and 40.
Right,
and,
right.
You know. It's a whole different thing. Yeah. But still, so why doesn't Domas get more credit for what he's doing?
It's a great question. And I'll raise another issue. The NBA fan voting first round came out.
Mm-hmm.
Domas not even listed top 10 among front court players. And so clearly, he's not a highlight reel. He's not on SportsCenter, that kind of thing. He's not flashy. But neither is Jokic. You know, Jokic is just very solid, very good at what he does. And I think Domas is as well. And I think because he doesn't play above the rim, but neither does Jokic. Like, it's, and somebody, you know, when you look at Domas and Jokic, Domas is Jokic light. You know, he's that knockoff version. Still pretty good. Not quite Jokic, but still, I just don't understand the level of disrespect that this guy gets night in and night out. Are we just so used to what he does? Like, oh, it's another ho-hum double-double, ho-hum triple-double seven this season. Like, this guy is putting up numbers, he's going to pass like Chris Webber in categories here. And like, you could argue when it's all said, he might be the best big man in Sacramento Kings history.
Yep.
When it's all said and done.
Yep. The first time I heard that argument last year, I was like, come on.
Right.
But now it's like, yeah, he probably is.
Like,
right?
No, he hasn't even been here 2 full years yet. Remember, it was 2 years ago they made that trade, if I'm correct. Like, he had the half season, then he had last year, and now part of this season. And so he hasn't even been here two full seasons yet.
I like the way our buddy Jerry Reynolds parses that question because, you know, he obviously has a unique perspective on it. He says, and he loves Sabonis, and he loved Webb. He said Webb was probably a better player,
yeah,
but Sabonis is doing more for the Kings than Weber did when he was here. And Weber did a lot.
Weber did a lot, yes. Yeah. I think when you look at Domantas Sabonis and what he's doing for the Sacramento Kings, first of all, let's talk about Weber had tons of pieces around. Sure, they ran the offense through him, but you also had Bibby. You also had Vlade. Like, you had pieces. Domas is the catalyst offensively. He does so much for this team. He's the quarterback out there. And then you could argue he's the cornerback or the middle linebacker on defense, mm-hmm, making the calls as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the beating that he takes. You know, you talk about guys who are irreplaceable on our team. Fox, obviously, Malik Monk. But I could argue we don't have anybody on this roster that comes even close to what Domantas Sabonis can do.
That's true. I struggle with the Weber-Sabonis thing just because Weber was such a unique player. Going, yeah, back to, I remember when I was first aware of him when he went to college and just watching him, and the combination of skills was just very unique. So I have a hard time saying anybody's better than he was as a King, but I understand the argument. Whereas a year ago, I said, I won't even, you know, talk to him.
Let me ask you this about the Weber comparison, because statistically, Weber's a much better scorer,
right,
than Domas. You know, he averaged 28 points per game when he was here. Can Domas, could he be that guy? But because of the offense, his nature, he's not looking for his as much. Could he be a 24 point per game scorer, 25?
I don't know. It'd be tough just because Webb, and you know this,
yeah,
Webb had so many different ways to score.
Right,
I think
right.
He had more.
He had the foul line jumper, the midi. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, if Sabonis was on a team where they're just getting him the ball all the time, usage rate way up,
maybe
he could. But Webb just had more things available to him.
More tools in his tool bag. Yeah.
But as far as the voting, one of the first teams that I ever covered in terms of going into the locker room and talking to coaches and players was the Warrior team when George Karl was the coach. And I used to just go in there and just listen to him talk. And I remember one year somebody stomped out the All-Star game. And this is my advice for Kings fans, think of it this way. And somebody said something about the All-Star game. And George Karl's like, the All-Star game. Who cares about the All-Star game? And it is, to a degree, a lot of it is a popularity contest. And so the Kings right now are not as popular. Maybe if they'd won last year, if they'd won that first round series, maybe they'd be more popular. Well, they're not as popular as some of the bigger brand team guys in basketball. Who cares, right? It's like, who was the guy we talked to this week from The Ringer, Michael Pena?
Yeah, Michael Pena.
Said, well, I think because the Kings kind of brought back the same guys and they didn't have a ton of success in the playoffs last year, so fans around the country are not as excited about them. So that's all it is. It's just fans are just not as aware of what Fox and Sabonis are doing.
Yeah, and if
they're not, that's on them.
That's on them. And if you ask De'Aaron Fox, to your point, who cares? Like, Fox isn't interested in putting himself out there campaigning for an all-star spot. He lets his play do the talking. You're right. I will say, when you talk about all-star nod, I'm looking at Tyrese Halliburton. I don't know if you saw those numbers.
Yeah, I did.
In terms of all-star voting this season, what Tyrese Halliburton got, it is insane. He is the leading vote getter among Eastern Conference guards. 1.38 million votes. Our guy, De'Aaron Fox, 210,000.
That is a little.
That is
curious.
It's curious, and it makes me furious, to be honest. Like, because there's this narrative about Tyrese that the league is pushing, the networks are pushing. He's always on the highlights. He's a great player. We love Tyrese. I don't feel that same energy about our guy, De'Aaron Fox.
Hmm.
It's frustrating.
Do you feel that energy around Frankie? Does he bring that kind of energy?
Yeah, Frankie knows his stuff, so he's going to be bringing it, yeah.
With last night's win is the loss to Charlotte, flushed and forgotten. Frankie Cardicelli, our Sacktown Sports Kings insider, joins us next with more on that and more. Drive, guys, rolling on here on Sacktown Sports.
Can the Niners build?
Yeah, we're still just enjoying the after effects of last night's huge win. Malik Monk said, "That's games like that. Those moments like that's what you play for." And I think it's games like that's why you're a fan, right? It was tremendous. But we also are dealing today with the fact that the Kings aren't doing great in the All-Star voting. Here's somebody who can explain that, I hope, because he comes to us today wearing his All-Star 2023 Utah T-shirt.
Salt Lake.
Joining the Drive Guys now, our Sacktown Sports Kings insider, Frankie Cardicelli. Frankie, what is going on with the Kings and the All-Star vote?
It's rigged. No. I put something on, I guess, a thought on Twitter. I think it's very, clear that it's, I don't want to say popularity contest, but it's kind of hard to say it's not a popularity contest. You see the Los Angeles, is the New Yorks. Obviously, the All-Star game is in Indiana. Tyrese Halliburton is up there on the leaderboard. But, I don't think it's really, it'd be great to have Sabonis on there, at least on the bottom.
Yeah, he's not even listed among the top 10.
You see guys like Austin Reeves on there. Klay Thompson's on there. He's had an okay season. Ja Morant, who's played, I think, in, seven games?
Yeah.
That's just the tough part about fan voting, and maybe down the line the NBA can try to readjust that, but I'm used to seeing the Kings get a little bit of disrespect in the fan vote.
Here's my issue with it, Frankie. It is a popularity contest.
Yeah.
How come our guys aren't more popular? Is it just because we play in Sacramento? Are we not doing a good enough job pushing them? Do we need to get the word out to Kings fans to support our guys? Is it our guys not wanting that kind of attention? What is it? Because you're right, it's a popularity contest, but the statistics indicate they're on par with some of these great players in the league right now.
Yeah, or exceeding them.
They were exceeding them, yes.
And I think that was kind of something that was going on when DeMarcus Cousins was here. He really never got the respect as far as, the on the court, the antics, hey, that's a different conversation. But, the way that he played, you look at those numbers, you can't deny that's an all-star player. And you'd see him on those leaderboards sometimes on the 8th, 9th, 10th, or off the board completely. So this kind of goes back beyond. So I think it maybe is just a Sacramento thing, which is unfortunate because Sacramento, we all know now, is a great basketball city and a great basketball environment.
Right. I'd like to think that part of it is the rest of the country is ignorant to what's going on here. And as far as fans here are sophisticated enough to know that it's not really that important. So, it'd be nice, but.
I still think that we're going to see De'Aaron Fox in the All-Star game. I think Domantas Sabonis, I don't think there should be a conversation. I think he should be in the All-Star game, but I know there's a lot of bigs that are going to be in the running this year, but there's no way that you can quantify De'Aaron Fox not being an NBA All-Star, especially as he's scoring 30 points per game this year.
How badly, Frankie, did the Kings need that win last night?
It's funny. I honestly am looking at their last couple of games, and they were a couple crazy moments away from dropping. Right now I'm looking at their last four games, are 3-1. If they lose last night, we're talking a whole different tone right now. And there are conversations, of course, we can talk about as far as concerns in the long run and whatnot. But I think last night was just a really fun, memorable basketball game. And I want to give you some props for Kyle. Great call last night, too.
I was watching it back
this morning.
Thank you.
Just a really fun game. My family was in town. I think I told Alan and Chris how my brother's visiting. He's in the Air Force, and I wanted to make sure that he went to the Charlotte game. I said, sell your tickets for the fourth and go to the third because Charlotte is...
You get to win that night, right?
They lost 10 in a row.
Right.
Thankfully, they kept their tickets to last night and they got to experience it. But it was a fun basketball game that had a little bit of everything. Some chaos, maybe a lot of chaos, but a lot of great things as well.
How about this, Kyle? Frankie last night at some point had, and I was standing this close to you from him and his family, and he's introduced him to Watkins and all these people. And I was standing right there and
You didn't get no introduction?
Weren't you talking? You were talking with either JD or Alan.
I got shut down.
I don't know, man. Y'all got to settle this. Y'all got to talk it out like Mike Brown and Malik over here.
I didn't want to interrupt you. I honestly pointed at you guys. I'm like, those are my coworkers. That's Alan and that's Whitey.
All I saw was he pointed and then pitched his nose.
Dang. I see how it is, Frankie.
Come on.
You doing my guy like that?
They'll be at more games, okay?
Okay.
You can meet the family.
Yeah. If there was any doubt before last night, I'm sure it's erased now. Malik Monk, you got to re-sign him, right? We talk about off-season trades, whatever. Is priority number one making sure we lock up Malik Monk?
I think, just heading into the off-season for sure. That's number one on my list. I mean, as far as the top storylines to watch once the season's over, I don't see a way the Kings can let him go. And I know that there's a bunch of it's a little murky as far as the contract situation. Other teams can offer more money, But there's other ways the Kings can offer, like a one-on-one deal as far as right. like a two-year deal with a player option that they can then get his bird rights and sign him to a much larger deal. I think the Kings have a good shot of retaining him because of the fact that you have the De'Aaron Fox factor. They're great friends. They're very close. The way that Malik's really bought into being a King in this city, I think it means
seems
something
genuine.
To him.
I'm buying all that.
Yeah, he's taking post-game pictures, driving home with the beam in the background. Right. I've seen that all over social. I think it really does mean a lot to him. And the fact that this fan base is – it's an incredible fan base. And I think that Sacramento gets a lot of flack around the league as far as people maybe don't want to play there until they play here, I think. Especially now when they're a winning team. I mean, before it was tougher to have guys come here. Rudy Gay obviously was here, and the basketball hell thing was – that's a quote that's thrown on a lot. But this is a way different – like, this is way different. The Kings have a winning culture. They're establishing it right now with this coaching staff, a great season coaching staff. They have players in De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, other veterans around that can kind of build off of. But Malik Monk right now making a run for Sixth Man of the Year, I didn't think he deserves to be either the one or top two choices right now. And I don't see a reason why the Kings should let him go. They should be as aggressive as any other team out there.
Here's a question for you, Frankie, from Scooter 916 on the chat. And Kyle, you may have some information on this as well. Frankie, all caps, by the way. Frankie! I've been waiting for you all day to ask this. Is Herter dealing with a hand injury? Looked like he was flexing his hand a lot last night.
It definitely seems like it's something that's obviously not feeling 100%.
Right,
but, I mean, if you feel good enough to play, you feel good enough to play.
Yeah.
And I think that if Kevin was really impacted by it enough where it was impacting his shot or hurting the team, I think that the training staff, and again, the Kings have a phenomenal training staff as well, won awards last year for keeping the Kings healthy. And they've navigated a little tough spell this year as well. But I think if it was really affecting him, he wouldn't be out there. I think that Kevin right now is just going through things we've seen before from Kevin. He's kind of streaky. I mean, a lot of shooters in the league are streaky, and right now he's going through a tough stretch, and obviously the lineup changes is definitely a cloud that's probably hanging over his head a little bit. I think he's a human being. It wouldn't affect anyone if they were whether it's long term or short term. I mean, if you're briefly demoted at your job, it's going to affect you a little bit, and he's taking it in stride, and he's out there playing minutes. I mean, 7 rebounds last night. I think he made an impact at certain points in the game. But the Kings miss his shooting. There's no question the Kings miss his shooting right now.
Yeah. He suffered a hand injury against the Hawks. Remember, left that game, didn't come back. And the thing I'm worried about with Herter, and you could tell he's off, it doesn't even look good coming off his hand, I don't feel like. You know, even when he lets it go, it's a little, it's something, a hitch or something. Yeah, something's not quite right. With that being said, if the Kings are going to make a run, do what they need to do, he has to get going, right? Like, I mean, Malik can't do it all himself. From him and Keegan can't and De'Aaron. Like, we need Kevin Herter to be Kevin Herter.
Yeah, I mean, imagine how much of a difference it would have made last night when you see De'Aaron Fox, who is also a human, and he's been incredible this year. I think that was his maybe second time this year where I've been, wow, De'Aaron had a bad night.
Right.
You need your other guys to step up. And last night, which we did not see against Charlotte, you have your Keegan Murray stepping up. You have Malik Monk going for 37. Harrison Barnes, 17 points.
Yeah.
Kevin really is that other missing piece that was there last year and was a huge part of it. I mean, he had the best year of his career last year, career highs across the board. If they can kind of re-tap back into that, tap back into that part of his game, and if he can do it off the bench too and kind of form that combo with Malik Monk, and the Kings could have a really strong bench unit of Monk, Herter, and Lyles, I think the Kings would feel really good about it. But again, Kevin has snapped out of it before. I think as long as he's getting minutes, he'll snap out of it again. He's a great shooter. But that's something that the other guys around the media table were talking about last night, too, is the same thing you just said, Kyle. The shot does look a little different. Even in warm-ups, it looks a little – and we're not shot doctors by any means here, but it just looks a little off.
Yeah.
And he'll make the adjustments. I think I have no doubt he'll be knocking down threes at some point.
Yeah. I was next to that table, by the way. It was me and Scott Moak and Ross, Jay Ross. We didn't get to sit
It filled up quick.
It did.
It filled up really quick.
All right, Frankie, you know, you got the whole cowboy thing going for you, which I respect, but it's time to cut through all that and get down to what's really going on here. What is the deal with the Kings' poor foul shooting?
I don't have the numbers in front of me. Someone told me, I have to do the research, but I think they've been like a bottom free throw shooting team for years. I think it goes back years. Like, I don't know when they've had even back in like 2002, I know the biggest problem, sorry to, cover your ears, everybody, but that was the biggest knock on them too. They couldn't make the free throws. It really is. It's a puzzling thing because we've seen them in practice. I think there was a day early in camp where they let the media in and we have to kind of wait and they do their free throws. And if you miss a free throw, you have to make two in a row. If you miss one, they run down and back and nobody could make a, just nobody could do it for a while. And it just kind of is puzzling. We're at this point in the season and, it just hasn't gotten much better. You have your guys like Malik, who did miss a free throw last night at an unideal time, but he's a 90% free throw shooter. It just is, I don't know if they have to make some kind of gesture to the basketball gods. I'm not sure what Joe Brody's solution.
Right?
Yeah.
Sort of sacrifice or something?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. They have good shooters. Yeah. It's just they're not knocking them down right now. But it really is like a long-standing issue that goes beyond this year and maybe just is a part of the Kings franchise lore. They're just not a great free throw shooting team.
All right, so they're 20-13 right now, Frankie. You extrapolate the numbers. You know, you look at the win total. They're ahead of pace. They were 18-15 this time last year. But the vibe feels different. I'm starting to look at it like, you know what? Things aren't perfect. It's not going well, but yet you're still on a better pace than last year. How do you view this season and their ceiling as compared to last season?
I think it's like an interesting conversation as far as their approach. And I think Sam Amick was on with the guys this morning, Dave and Jason, talking about how he's heard from league circles that the question isn't really if the Kings will try to make a move, it's when will they make a move. And it's kind of a similar situation that last year they're in a position to make a run, you think, right? But they're kind of in like that little limbo, and the West is tougher this year. Are they going to be a 5 seed? Can they make that jump back in the top 4 and host a series? Or are they going to be a play-in team? They really can go any direction right now. The West is that close. I'm looking at as far as they've had to handle more adversity this year. And yet, like you said, Kyle, they're ahead of where they were last year, handling the injuries, handling some bad losses. And the blowouts are a concern. I still think that's something that doesn't make much sense and why the Kings have lost these games and the point differential is what it is. But the fact that they're able to handle that adversity, and again, some of these teams are shorthanded, but as we saw last night, it doesn't really matter. The Orlando Magic were very shorthanded last night. And
yeah.
Speaking of adversity, they broke a franchise record for made three-pointers last night. So the Kings have handled these changes, and I think that the thing that I guess concerns me a little bit is these changes kind of show me with the lineup and the rotations that Mike Brown and the staff, they're searching for something. Mm. They're searching to see how they can be more physical and get off to better starts in these games. I think that the defense is still a concern. Chris Duarte is by no means Bruce Bowen, but he's someone that can bring more of a defensive impact than Kevin Huerter at this point. Mm. And you see guys like Sasha Vezenkov falling out of the rotation. Alex Len and JaVale McGee. Alex Len is someone I think he probably didn't – I didn't get any clarity on this, but probably didn't play last night because of the back-to-back is the only way I can equate it, maybe with his ankle. But they're searching right now. So I think that they're a couple pieces away. I think that it's a matter of roster personnel at this point. They don't have the guys to go in and just be lockdown defenders. They just don't. Juan Toscano-Anderson came in last night, had some timely plays.
Styles was going nuts.
You should have seen his face. Did you see his face when he checked in? Did you guys lock eyes? You and
I was sitting in front of him, and he was like, someone's pounding me. What? He goes, Juan Toscano-Anderson. So, yeah, I saw.
He was so excited. So excited. They need guys that can bring that intensity but have a little more on both ends of the floor. I'm looking at those kind of like around the edges moves right now. I'm not really expecting a big swing for the fences type move. I'm not sure how you guys feel, but I think some coloring around the edges moves would be exactly what this team needs, especially on the defensive end.
Real quick here, because we had Jake Fisher of Yahoo Sports on, and he says the Kings are still in the running for Pascal Siakam. What do you think about Pascal here in Sacramento?
I mean, I would love it. It's just, is it still contingent on Keegan Murray being involved? That's
right,
the question.
Right, yeah.
And you see last night, again, Keegan still trying to find the consistency, but when he's on, like last night, he really is and scoring off the dribble and attacking the rim and knocking down threes at timely moments like that. Yeah. That's exactly what this team really needs.
Rebounding so, like, last night.
Six rebounds in the second overtime, which is incredible to me. But I think if you have to include Keegan, I'm hesitant just because of the fact that Siakam is an impending free agent. I'm not sure if that would entail a talk of a extension. Maybe that changes things, but going to be 30 next season. It's not as enticing to me as it was before. I think if he was a little younger on a longer deal, but Keegan, 23, he's on his rookie scale contract.
Right.
You have years you can have him under control. It just seems to me that if that's what it's contingent on, I'd balk at it.
Big question here, Frank. Are you going to delight your many fans by staying with us for another segment?
Sure.
Are you going to disappoint everybody and say, nah, I got stuff to do?
Anything for the mini fans.
Frank ain't got nothing going on. He ain't got no life outside of basketball.
You have family? You have family in town?
What you got? What you got something going on?
No. So my family, we're having like our last little, not now. I'm able to be here. I'm not going to run out. My brother leaves tomorrow to go back, he lives in Oklahoma. So he's at an Air Force base out there.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah,
okay.
I'd say tell him to say hi. You know, say hi for me. But I didn't meet him.
He didn't get to meet him, right?
He didn't get to meet him.
I said, "Do you want to meet Whitey?" He's like, He's like, where's Chris Watkins?
There you go.
Where's Carmichael
Day?
Go.
He's smart. Ouch. All right, we'll keep it rolling here then. Thank you, Jay. How much of the bad feelings from the Charlotte loss do you think are flushed as a result of what happened last night? Or, you know, where is that whole thing about the roller coaster, but last night was so great, but they just had maybe the worst loss of the year. So what's a fan supposed to do?
I mean, I think I look at it the same way as De'Aaron Fox, who said kind of, we have a game tomorrow. We can't really think about this. And Mike Brown said the same thing. Like, we're moving on to the next one. Like, you want to take the things that were really horrific from that game, obviously, and put them in the back of your head and, you know, work on that at a different time. But the matter at hand last night was Orlando Magic. And the Kings did look like they were coasting for a minute, and they were playing very good basketball. And I think as a whole, they did have a very good night last night. It just really – Orlando never slowed down making threes. Like, it really was just incredible that every time it seemed to got a ball left anyone's hands – and you have to tip your cap to Paolo Banchero, who I was a big fan of his in Duke. He's going to be a problem. Like, if he is that kind of player and he's scoring off the dribble, he's knocking down contested threes. He's just a big guy, 6'10", with a lot of muscle on him. He's really going to be a problem. I think one of my friends said last night, like, the Carmelo Anthony comp, I'm like, well, he's a little bigger than Melo, isn't he? Like, I think that might – I mean, he might be even better, which is insane to say. But I think the Charlotte loss really was kind of just like a – you have to hope it's like a palate cleanser as far as, okay, well, this is a reality check. And obviously that's on the heels of a tough stretch where you fall down big in Atlanta, you lose a tough game to Portland. I think tomorrow's game, I'm not saying it's going to – it matters more than any of the ones we had before, but I'm going to pay a little more close attention and see how the Kings handle this new-look Raptors team that seems to be gelling very well together. They have a new young core now with R.J. Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley. If Siakam stays there, that could be a problem as well. They have a nice group. So tomorrow, I know that the record might be a little deceiving. As we know, records don't mean much when you have losses against Charlotte and in Portland. But I do think that loss against Charlotte hopefully lit a fire into them a little bit.
You know, we saw Malik Monk drop 37 last night, 9 dimes, and The talk today is we got to put him in the starting lineup. I'm totally against that, Frankie. Where do you stand on that argument, Malik in the starting lineup?
I'm with you. I'm against it. I think that what makes Malik so great is the fact that you can have De'Aaron Fox come off the floor, and you have a guy that possesses a lot of the same qualities that De'Aaron Fox has as far as he can run the offense. He's been a complete assist machine this year. He's going to break all of his career highs in assists. He's someone who can score, you know, by attacking the paint and get to the rim and get to the free throw line. He can knock down threes at a very good rate. I think he's over 40% this season. I think that if you add him into the starting lineup, and again, we see these guys close games together. That's what makes this lineup so great, is that's kind of waiting for you in the wings. If you can find a way to get production out of other guys on this roster, again, if Kevin can tap back into his offense, if Chris Duarte, who had a good game, I believe, against Charlotte, if you can have some stuff from get more from those guys, you keep your bench unit intact. Trey Lyles has been stepping up the last couple of games. Alex Len obviously has been an upgrade over JaVale McGee in the short term. I think if you have Malik Monk on your bench, that makes the Kings a much more dangerous team. Right. If you put him in the starting lineup, still a good team, but I mean, you have to put a lot more on guys like Kevin Huerter and Trey Lyles, and I think that's not fair to those guys.
Frankie, what do you think of this notion? Kyle and I actually agree on this. De'Aaron Fox, we know that he's on track to be the greatest Sacramento King ever. He's the best player on the team, but it seems like there are times when they're more difficult to guard as a team if they're not quite so De'Aaron Fox dominant. Do you agree with that? I mean, last night, the shot distribution was a little more democratic. Again, I'm not saying he shoots too much, but sometimes when it's not just him carrying a heavy offensive load, I think this team can be more efficient offensively.
And that's kind of what the case was last year. I mean, De'Aaron was a 25-point-per-game scorer. He's up to 30 right now, and I know that's 5 points, you know, I'm not saying 5 points split among Barnes, Huerter, and all those other guys is that much of a significance. But when you have guys that are struggling out of the gates, like Keegan was having a rough go to begin the year, and De'Aaron really had to step up. Kevin's been, you know, obviously we've talked about a lot today. He's really had a hard time. Harrison Barnes really has had a knack of disappearing in certain games. Last night, a big game from him. Last night was kind of like peeling back the curtain a little bit, and maybe not as much to the extent as last year because Fox really had a very uncharacteristic night. Like that was
maybe
the worst game we've seen out of Fox in years. And that's fine because he had guys stepping up. And that really does, like you said, Whitey, it does make them harder to defend. You have multiple guys giving them buckets last night. Keegan Murray, Malik Monk, Harrison Barnes, Domantas Sabonis. I mean, that's quite a bevy of guys you have going at you versus De'Aaron Fox just going for 40 and maybe someone else chipping in with 18, which is what we've seen a lot over the past couple of weeks. So I completely agree. If Keegan Murray can find consistency, that's the guy I'm looking at. Can he do it? Can he be that guy? Because we know Sabonis is going to be a monster. I'm looking at his game logs, and there's not really many where you look at it and go, well, he should have done a little more here and there. It's Keegan, who's supposed to be this third option. Because we talk about who can the Kings bring in to be that third option. Keegan was on fire a couple weeks ago, and he kind of quieted down a little bit. Well, last night, we usually see, again, as far as streaky players go, he really, once he gets a game like that, he goes. So I'm looking forward to DeMar to see what he does next.
You know, when you look at the schedule coming up, you got two more home games. Obviously, our nemesis, the Pelicans. Ooh. I know, right? I know. But then you got that five-game road trip. You know, how critical, I guess, do you think this next stretch is? Or are we going to continue to ride the roller coaster with this team? I want them to finally settle in and rattle off six, seven wins in a row. Man, can you imagine if they did that? 20-13, you rattle off six in a row, 26-13, like, the opportunity is there when you look at the schedule. What do you think about these next week or two here?
I mean, again, this is the time to do it, and it has been since this homestand started. Or even like
before then.
Even
with the Portland game,
That was the schedule I was looking at going, wow, they got Portland, Atlanta, they got Charlotte. And it continues. It doesn't change anything. I mean, you have a great test as far as tomorrow, Toronto, new look. New Orleans, beating them would just be huge as far as the Kings going, okay, we can beat these guys finally. It'd be the fourth time they've played this year. But you have to be able to get past these guys in the conference. And then looking past them, I think the back-to-backs in
Detroit and Charlotte. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not trying to be like a hot take. I think you got to have both. I'm sorry, but
you got to have both. I agree.
For a team that has aspirations,
shock Frankie,
like the Kings, this is a hot take.
Hot take.
You got to
beat Detroit. You have to beat Detroit.
I mean, you see how furious teams are playing them right now. I mean, the Utah game last night was like Game 7 of the finals. That's like tremendous. They were going insane.
It was.
So it is a great stretch as far as. Not great stretch. It could be a great stretch.
Could be, yeah.
And if you beat Charlotte, again, it's a 4-game winning streak going in tomorrow if they would have beat Charlotte. So they're playing some good basketball as a whole as far as the win-loss record goes. But East Coast trips can be tricky. Mm-hmm. They do have some hard games in there as well. They got to go to Philly, which that's
Milwaukee,
that game's going to be on national TV. Are you going to the Philly game?
Yeah, of course, big dog.
Yeah,
Come on, man.
Back there. I know they did.
Can't keep me out of Philly.
No way, man. And the Kings have a bad track record in Philly. They really don't play well in Philly. So they have plenty of chances to prove themselves and plenty of games that are winnable in there. And I'm looking forward to seeing where they are after it. Because, again, like last year at this time was when they went on one of those long streaks. I think they had a 6-game winning streak at the end of January.
Right, in January, yeah.
So if we're talking about parallels to last year, here's a chance for them to stack up some wins.
Finally, Frankie, I want to ask you about the Mike Brown Malik thing. And it's funny, somebody on the chat here is like, does Frankie go to practices? He's not really an insider if he doesn't. Well, Mike Brown, doesn't Mike Brown follow you on Twitter or his kids do or something?
His kids see my...
Yeah.
By the way,
Mike Brown talks to him.
Yeah, I remember that.
He did. He showed me his phone. His son sending him some stuff. Luckily, it's good stuff. I told him.
Yeah, okay, right.
It's not bad stuff. We go to practice. Yeah, we're at practice.
Yeah, he's at practice.
Brendan and I both are at practice.
Yes, of course. So I know that it's really no surprise Malik and Coach got into it during the game. We all saw that. That happened. They acknowledged that it won't be the last time. The only thing that surprised me about any of that was that Coach yesterday publicly apologized, not for benching Malik, but as he said, he shared it with everybody that, hey, I told him I'm sorry, I should have coached you better. That was the only thing that surprised me, is that he said that publicly. What did you make of any of that? Ultimately, just nothing? Or interesting, though. What did you make of it?
We've seen this happen a little before, too. During camp, there was a clip that actually did go around. And I didn't put it out. I wasn't certain if I should put it out, so I didn't. But it was Mike and getting on Malik for, you know, I think he didn't get back on defense. It was a very heated exchange. And it's been going on since last year, too. They do have heated exchanges sometimes, but that's sports. Like, coaches and players don't always see eye to eye. But, again, it's about the respect. Is the mutual respect there? And the fact that Mike and Malik were able to sit down and have a level-headed discussion and get back on a level playing ground, and then they both say great things about each other in post-game press conferences, there's no rift. These are just guys that are both competitors. Mike Brown also is a very fiery guy. I know he doesn't always come off as fiery. He's a very, very nice guy. He's the funniest, I think the most interesting head coach in the NBA. But he's fiery. He wants to win. Like, he really does want it more than a lot of other guys around the league, I think. And Malik Monk is someone who might want more than anybody on this team as far as his competitive spirit. He is a competitor. And that back and forth was more just two guys that are both fiery guys going at it. And that's the thing that matters most. Is there a mutual respect there? And there is. But this is something that's been happening since last year. We've seen it more than once.
Yeah, Frankie Cardicelli, our Kings insider, Sacktown Sports, 1140. I'll let you go from me on this, Frankie. in the whole scheme of life, the whole big picture for your Sacramento Kings, how are you feeling about this team and its potential to at least get out of the first round?
Well, that's what I was telling the other guys, Alan and Chris, that what would you consider this season to be a failure? And to me, personally, it's I think if you don't get out of the first round, it's a failure of a season. I think that you want to keep climbing that ladder. And we didn't all agree. I think Brendan had a point. Like, you know, I think just getting to the first round, it depends on who you're playing. If you're playing, like, Oklahoma City in the first round, you go 6 or 7, I think you can be okay with that. And, like, yeah, we don't know what the playoff series is going to look like because, like, last year against Golden State, that was one, you know, battle of a series.
Yeah.
And a couple shots fall here and there. The Kings are in the second round and maybe further because they matched up well, in my opinion, against Los Angeles last year. That's where I stand.
What does Brendan know about failure? He couldn't even get the mayonnaise container open.
I kid you not. Honestly crazy that he came up with just the plain glizzy and was just like, I couldn't get it open.
What do you mean he couldn't get it open?
He's a good guy. He's a good kid.
Good kid.
Sorry to interrupt.
I always refer to him as a kid. He thinks it's hilarious. He calls me the oldest young person in Kings media because I always call him a youngster. Yeah, but I'm looking at it as I think the Kings need to finish in the second round of the season, second round of the playoffs at bare minimum. I think that's where this team wants to go. That's where they want to be. They want to go further than that. I'm just saying, for me personally, a first round clinch would be great because again, the playoff drought's over. But now I'm looking at, they haven't won a playoff series since 2004.
Yeah.
So that's the next thing. You want to keep progressing. You don't want to be complacent. And this group does not want to be complacent at all. They want to go to the next thing.
Yeah. I'm in the minority. I know Kyle disagrees with this. I would love for them to win many, many, many rounds. To me, it's been so long since they went to the playoffs. If they get to the playoffs, to me, that is a success. Be great if they get out of the first round. It doesn't always, that progress doesn't always go in a linear fashion. So to me, if you get into the playoffs, success, anything else is gravy, but I hope they win many, many rounds.
And by the way, let me add, I'm being a little greedy there. Like, I'm just, you know,
you aim
high. I think aim high. Like, sure. Why not? You're supposed to aim high. Why else do you play the game? But it's a good group. I think as far as everything going on right now, it's a good group, and they're probably going to make some adjustments down the line, and we're going to see what happens. But it's a good group.
Right. Yeah, and when they do, Frankie will tell you all about it at SacktownSports.com. And, of course, you hear him as our insider on all the shows. Thank you, Frankie.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, appreciate it.
Tell your brother hi, man.
I will.
Tell him Whitey said hello.
I'll tell him. You'll meet him at some point. But
look at that look he's getting.
I'll see you guys tomorrow, all right? I'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, we'll see you tomorrow.
The Kings aren't getting much all-star vote love, but a former King is. That's next with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.